It's time for Matt Geek Gab, and listener Frank brings us our quick tip of the week. He says, using iOS 26 beta, I just discovered that if you long press an image in iMessage and choose set as background from the pop-up menu, it does not set your iPhone wallpaper, as I assumed. Instead, it sets that picture as the background for that specific iMessage conversation. Yes, you can personalize chats in messages in iOS 26, Mac OS 20, all the 26s. More quick tips like this, including tips about your 26s today on Mac Geek Gab. 11:07 for Monday, September 15th, National Online Learning Day. That seemed appropriate. 2025. Greetings, folks, and welcome to Mac Geek Gab, the show where we share tips like that. We share cool stuff found that you send in. We share questions that you send in, and sometimes that we have of our own. And we also hopefully share answers, or at least a path down the troubleshooting process for us all to follow, with the goal being that each and every one of us learns at least five new things every single time we get together. Our sponsors for this episode include Clean My Mac. We're at clnmy.com/MacGeekGab and or using code MacGeek. You can try it free for 7 days and get 20% off. The new camera from Insta360 at store.insta360.com. Code MGG. We'll put a link in the show notes for that. And a new sponsor for us, Open Case. Cool case with an open back. Designed for MagSafe accessories. I've been using it on my phone basically since we got home from MacStock. Can't wait to tell you about all three of those things. For now, though, here in Durham, New Hampshire, I'm Dave Hamilton.
And here in South Dakota, I'm Adam Christensen.
And here also in New Hampshire, it's Pilot Pete. I'm going to tell you everything that happened last week at the Apple awe-dropping event, unless Dave cuts me off, and I think he's going to.
Well, he's probably going to, because we're living in the future a little bit here. We have to, based on some schedules, we're recording this ahead of time. So we are recording this episode before Apple's event happened. Yes, we're recording this before episode 1106.
Wait, it hasn't happened yet?
Hopefully that won't become a theme of this show. In fact, there you go. So, and also, did you introduce yourself, Adam? Did I miss that in Pete's distraction?
Yeah,
pretty sure I did.
Yeah. You did. Yeah, I'm here in South Dakota still.
Welcome back to the future, right. Dave.
Even in the future.
Yeah, you did. See?
Also in the past. Oh, man.
Let's just go to quick tips. Wait. Before we go to quick tips, I do want to remind everybody of our giveaway for September, and it's still September no matter what the date is, as long as it's still September. MacGeekUp.com/giveaway. Yeah. Go and sign up. It's not that day in September yet, though. Everything's happening before Body Ya Day. You sign up at MacGeekUp.com/giveaway for the Unify Cloud Gateway Fiber and the U7 Pro XG. I want the Unified Cloud Gateway Fiber. I have the Unified Cloud Gateway Max, and the fiber has a faster CPU and some faster networking ports, and I love this router. So very, very cool stuff. Go sign up because we are giving away both of those things, even if I can't have it. I really want it, though. So go sign up for the giveaway, MacGeekUp.com/giveaway. Okay, now whatever you guys want to do. Quick tip.
Quick tip, don't mess with the sacred timeline.
That's right.
Yeah, right. Don't cross the streams. Don't mess with the timeline. You know. All right. So Todd writes in, and I made it all blue. Make sure we're there. Okay. So he says, I was able to change my MacBook system setting. I got the wrong one. Okay. Todd wrote in about Apple TV Plus is still only $99 a year, a savings of $56.88. If you do it monthly, it's $12.99, I think. And a year, it's still $99. So save yourself $56.88 by subscribing yearly. And I wanted to check that out to make sure, you know, that that wasn't just something he saw, but we can all see. And it turns out I couldn't see it. I'm like, oh, what's going on here? So first of all, nice catch, Todd. That is still available at $99. But if you are not an Apple TV Plus subscriber, like at the very moment, I'm not. And I think that's why Apple's doing this, to get more people into the long-term plan. That's my summation, whatever. What you have to do is go in and sign up for the standard $12.99 a month Apple TV Plus subscription via the Apple TV app or tv.apple.com. And after completing the monthly sign up, navigate to your Apple ID's subscription management page on an iPhone. Go to settings, your name, and then subscriptions, and then select your Apple TV Plus subscription from the list. Then tap see all plans or change plans, and then you should be able to see the $99 a year plan and then confirm the change. So they don't offer it up front anywhere that I could find. I'm wondering if either of you or Apple TV Plus could wander in there in the next, you know, over the next one and verify that you have the ability to sign that. But I used Google AI to confirm that, in fact, that's how you get there from here, because I didn't want to sign up for $12.99 yet. I'm waiting for a couple more things I want to see before I put it all up and on there again, because, you know,
interesting.
I'm a cheap airline captain.
Yeah, no, we understand. I'm on Apple One, so
so you can't.
It's different,
see.
But yeah, he had written back in, and I think that's what that's where the confusion came from. In what you were reading initially, because he said that he was able to change it on his MacBook. Like once he was subscribed, he was able to go into system settings and make that change. But that's really interesting. Yeah. As I'm looking on the Apple TV Plus page at pricing, there is nothing about
they don't advertise
annual
it as $99.
Yeah. Nice
but
catch.
Google AI says it's there, and so I was kind of like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's a great tip. That's a huge savings.
Right. Wow. Now you can spend some of that money on some of the cool stuff found. We'll do in another segment.
on the iPhone 26 that they announced, right?
Go.
That's the name of it?
That's right.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No. We've already said we're recording this. Dave,
it's the foldable iPhone 17 Air.
I think some of that is going to have been true by the time this episode comes out.
I'm shooting in the dark, man. Something's bound to hit the target.
Yeah, that's right. All right. Let's that's a great tip. Thank you, Todd. So shall we move on to Ben?
Yeah. Ben says, hey, regarding something I guess we were talking about on 1104, he says, regarding the discussion of scheduling a Mac to restart, I thought of a way to do something similar on iPhone. You can create a shortcut to restart the device. Use the shutdown action and choose restart. So it follows that you could build an automation that runs this shortcut, or at least prompts you to do so. So you could automate restarting your... I think this was related to, Dave, I think you said you had some kind of thing where you periodically restart your Mac.
I have my Mac scheduled to restart.
That was it.
Yeah, I configured it back when there was actually a user interface element to configure it. That went away, but it's still there, and you can manage it from the terminal, of course. And we'll put a link in the show notes for that. But yeah, I never realized that the shutdown action in shortcuts, you can change it. You choose shutdown and then change it to restart. And then you could automate that. I'm guessing it's going to ask a question, but at least it's a reminder to restart the iPhone. Huh. Ah, I like this. That's smart, Ben. Really smart.
Yeah.
Yeah, good stuff. Cool. Our next quick tip comes from Jim in Alaska, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, he sent in an audio one, and let's hear what he has to say.
Hey, guys. This is Jim up in Alaska. With respect to storing cords and carrying them along in your bag, I've always used the freezer strength Ziploc bags in either quart or gallon size to put coiled cords into. You get a see-through container. Don't seal the top. You can stuff them into anything. Lasts a long time. I've got a little north 18,000 hours drilling holes in the sky, and I've used these for years. Last a long time, cost almost nothing.
Amazing. Sorry to interrupt. Yeah. Pete, I didn't realize you were playing the audio. And I'm like, wait, I'm not playing audio. Where's that coming from?
Yeah. I figured it out. I figured out how to do
it. It's great. Ooh. It's great.
Yeah. So I just 18,000 hours. So, Jim, you going to stick with this flying thing or is it just a sideline? You know, holy cow.
I think that's more than I know that you have. Is that right, Pete? A little bit.
Yeah. More. I've been flying for 43 years. And I'm just over 12,000. So
wow,
yeah,
18,000 hours. All right, but back to the topic at hand. That's right.
That's a lot. Yeah. So and a great tip there, Jim, because you know it's clear. You can easily see what you've got in there, and durable, freezer strength, good stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
And cost, relatively speaking, next to nothing.
Yeah, you probably have some laying around in your kitchen drawers.
Yeah. So the ones I have, the one I use, as I gave on my previous tip, are the. Are the little first class convenience pouches they give you when you get on, you know, Air France or Delta or something, and you go. And so mine are probably $4,000 or $5,000 a piece for those.
Yeah, exactly. The freezer storage bags are a little less expensive.
That's right.
This is not a reason to buy a first class ticket, folks.
No, don't do it.
I have a little bit of a mind hack about first class tickets because I am. There are times when I am tempted, you know, especially long before I have a flight, I'm thinking, oh, man, you know, this is like a 6 or 7 hour flight. Yeah. Like, crap, I'm in steerage. Yeah. How much is it going to cost to upgrade to, you know, this or that or the other thing? The time to ask that question is as you're getting up out of your steerage seat to get off the plane. And that's when I ask myself, would it have been worth $500 to change whatever was going to happen for the last 6 hours or however much it was going to cost. And most of the time, my answer to that question is no. It's like, you know what? I fit in the steerage seat. I watched a movie. I slept for half the thing. I chit-chatted with somebody. I never really cared that I was crammed into this seat other than the moment that I sat down. Now, sometimes, you know, especially if I have like a big person next to me whose shoulders are at the same height as mine, I like oddly, the opposite shoulders, like somebody short next to me is great because they, you know, we all fit together.
Yeah.
But other than that, you know, I'm able to talk myself out of spending my money on first class tickets. So
yeah, and then you know, use the freezer bag trick, put a sous vide steak and sides in there, and it's just like being in first class.
That's right.
I bring my own steak. There was one time, I'm always nice to airline personnel. They're humans just like the rest of us. I always say hello to them. They're profiling you when you get on the plane. You might as well make a good impression.
Right.
And I had them once. This was a long time ago. Actually, I've sort of had this happen twice, where they invited me up to first class to eat a meal and then sent me back to my regular seat.
You go now.
Yeah. Well, they didn't want to like serve me my first class meal that they wanted to give me. But, you know, I guess I got on the plane. I talked, oh, is there food available on this flight? No, I'm sorry. Just only in first class. Oh, dang. Okay. Well, whatever. You know, it's a long flight. I'll deal. And I was just nice to them. And then they were like, hey, come here for a second, would you? And they're like, we had an extra first class meal if you'd like to sit here and eat it, you know, whatever. I was like, oh, freaking amazing.
No, get
this
out.
It's great. Now, yeah. I went back. I was traveling alone, but I went back to my seat. They didn't kick me out, but it was
good.
Yeah. It was
weren't going to take advantage of their.
Exactly. It was more that. Yeah. And then I've had them like bring me extra snacks too. If you're just nice to people, like for the purpose of being nice to them, sometimes they then choose in return to be nice to you. So
it's the classic thing. Like this would always come up with Genius Bar stuff or support stuff. It's the whole classic, you know, you get more flies with honey than, you know, like if you're just nice, like you don't have to be, deliberately rude, you know, you can still be upset and, you know, but if you handle it nicely, you'll be surprised how much better service you get.
Yep.
Yeah. And understand the gate agent is the judge, jury, and executioner until they close the door. And then it's the captain.
Yeah.
They literally own the airplane. I we'll get off of this real quickly, but I watched a gate agent pull a guy out of a first class seat one morning because he said something rude to the gate agent. He goes, "Get out." The guy's like, "Well, I'm not going." He goes, "Oh, yes, actually you are. And you can either go now or you can have the police bring you out in handcuffs. Your choice." Wow. And he wound up getting, when he got up and left, the entire first, I had walked in late. I was like the last guy to load. The entire first class section was.
Oh.
They were happy to see him go. He had not been nice, apparently. Yeah, he had. So, but yeah, they own the airplane.
Yeah.
And it all has to do with safety and security and all that. So it's right that they do.
Yeah. But somebody's got to be responsible. Yeah. Yep. That's right. Yep. So, I have been irresponsible, guys. I installed the betas of 26 on everything basically the moment that we got back from Toronto. So it's been a, you know, a little over a week. By and large, it's been fine. I would say that of the three of them, four, iPadOS, iOS, watchOS and macOS. I have it on my laptop only, not on my like podcasting rig or anything. I would say that macOS 26 has been the most janky, to use a technical term. And it's not macOS. It's all of the like menu bar, like bartender. There's a beta for bartender, but you know, that kind of stuff is different at the moment. And that makes sense. That's, you know, here's the deal, right? iOS, you can't customize like you can macOS, right? macOS is the outlier. You can, third-party stuff can exist and do things that are not allowed on any of the other three operating systems. So it's fine. I've learned to like route around it. There was a moment of regret for sure. I was like, oh, this is going to suck. But it's been fine. But otherwise, they've been great. And I have a quick tip. Actually, I have two quick tips. iOS 26 now has, if you go into the battery settings and go into power mode, there's more than just low power mode. There is adaptive power mode now. And it says when your battery usage is higher than usual, iPhone can extend your battery life by making performance adjustments such as lowering display brightness, allowing some activities to take longer, aka lowering their CPU usage, or turning on low power mode at 20%. And then you can also toggle low power mode manually on and off. And you can choose whether to be notified when adaptive power is doing something. And I've seen it when it comes up and it's like, oh, we're you know, doing adaptive power is managing your phone in a way. And it so interesting. CPU throttling, that kind of thing. So just thought that was I had to turn it on. It was not on by default. So go into system settings it's on an iPhone. Settings, battery, adaptive power, or power mode, and then adaptive power. So, yeah, it is pretty cool. We probably won't get much. I don't know. Maybe there is a developer document about what it's doing, but you know, you never know. And then a tip for, and you will see this the first time you launch Spotlight on macOS 26, it's a little bit different. You've got more options. You can do the same thing. If your fingers start typing the name of something, it'll all come right up. Like all your muscle memory is going to work fine. But one of the things you can do is to command one, and it will show you all the icons of all your applications that you can, in alphabetical order, that you can scroll through. And you can also categorize or filter them by category: productivity and finance, utilities, business, social, travel, etc. So take a minute to look at that Spotlight screen in macOS 26. I think you'll probably like it. So that's what I have on those two. Go ahead.
Did I miss it? Did you do developer beta or public beta?
I am on developer betas across the board.
Developer beta. Okay, yeah. I tend to gravitate towards the public beta if I'm going to do it, just because I feel like it's probably more vetted at that point.
It is.
And maybe that's naive or wrong.
I don't know. My understanding was that public beta was always one version behind the developer beta. So if developer beta 9 is out, the public beta is
right.
that which was developer beta 8. But I don't think they've made changes to public beta since developer beta 8. I think they just lagged the release. But I don't know why I think that. I could be very wrong about that. So,
yeah. I'm naive. It's probably an assumption made on my part. My assumption was always like, okay, it's one version behind because they get all the feedback from the developer version of that and then maybe tweak some things so that public one's a little bit more stable. But
that sounds like I'll use the term truthy, right? Like that sounds like a smart thing. So maybe I don't know.
Maybe Apple developer can write and let us know.
And somebody can let us know. Yeah, that's right.
Where would they write to us, Pete?
Oh, you know what? I'd write to us at feedback@macgeekgab.com. But that's just me.
Yeah, that's right. feedback@macgeekgab.com.
feedback@macgeekgab.com is where most of this stuff has come in. The next quick tip from Lucas, though, just came to me in the car. And I don't mean that it just like magically came to me in the car. I mean that my son showed me this in the car. He's also been running the beta. I don't know if this works in previous versions of iOS because I wasn't running one by the time he showed me this. We have three garage doors at our home here, and they are all via various things, mostly the Meross garage door to HomeKit device, which I'll put a link in the show notes about that. And so Meross HomeKit, there you go. They are all connected to HomeKit, which means they show up in CarPlay, which means that as you get close to your house, the garage door that you interacted with most recently shows up on your CarPlay screen, and you can tap it to open it or close it, which is great. But if the one you interacted with most recently isn't the one you want to interact with, I've always just had to use my voice to say, hey, you know, open this different garage door or whatever. What Lucas showed me is if you go and just swipe up or down on the garage door bubble, it will change to your other garage doors. There's no indication on the bubble anywhere that you have scrollability on this thing, but you do. And it definitely works in the 26 versions of iOS 26. I don't know if it works in iOS 18, but by golly, it might. It might have been there all along and we just didn't know. So I don't know how he found this out. Maybe out of frustration, he was like, let me see. And it worked. I don't know. I should have asked him that question. But anyway, it does work. I've confirmed it both on his phone and on mine.
The infamous Apple hidden UI of gestures. Yeah.
I don't know.
Now you know.
That really, that's it. That's the quick tip, right? Like that's the epitome. As soon as he did it, I took a picture of it and, you know, prepped this note and, you know, from the back seat, Lisa was like, that's going to be on the show, isn't it? Like it already is on the list because I have a shortcut that takes my little thing and puts it on the list. So you too can automate your life if you're crazy like me. So, yupper.
Very nice.
Yupper. We got an interesting thing from Robert in the don't get caught category. We were talking about using external drives as your boot disk or at the very least, if you have to use your internal drive or if you choose to use your internal drive as the boot drive, and there are good reasons to do so, as we discussed recently, then storing as much as you can on your not boot drive is a good thing. And Robert says, Apple did a nasty thing a while back. They forced all third-party cloud storage providers, such as Dropbox, OneDrive, Google Drive, to require their base folder to be on the system drive. So if you had a small internal drive, but a large Dropbox folder that you were keeping on an external, you were SOL. He says, I bought a 4 terabyte internal SSD configuration for my Mac Studio M1 a few years ago, and now the tough decision of needing to go to 8 terabyte internal has kept me from upgrading my system so far. Is this a conspiracy theory to sell grossly overpriced internal Apple SSDs or just some undisclosed security privacy protection to save us from malicious hackers or nation states? He says, I don't know, but my wallet is suspicious. So I dug into this, and actually I've been messing with Claude AI to in addition to ChatGPT, and Claude gave a better answer. Apple introduced their new file provider API, well, it's not new anymore, that requires cloud storage services to store their local folders in home library cloud storage, which of course is on the system drive, and that affects Google Drive, OneDrive, Box, Dropbox, all when they migrated from using their own kernel extensions to Apple's new file provider framework. That's where that comes from. So Dropbox is, there are some workarounds, right? Dropbox is actively working to preserve the reliability and quality of our sync experience along with these changes, including the option to move the Dropbox folder onto an external drive. And they do have support for that. That they'll still store some things in home library cloud storage, but keeping the bulk of it out on the external drive so that they're honoring Apple's requirements while still letting you choose where your stuff gets stored. And there's a Dropbox help article about this, about all this. And it's about a year old. So I will put that in the show notes.
So this would go along with, I mean, it wasn't our recommendation, but it was a tip or a thing you could do, I guess is probably the better way we could say it, from a couple episodes ago, where you could opt to just move your whole home folder to an external drive.
Yes.
I don't like doing it, and I think I commented about it on that show, but yeah, it is technically possible, and people have successfully done it. So
it's there.
That would be a solution here.
Yeah, you can do it.
Apple should make it a lot easier to do that in this day and age, in my opinion.
Or not doable at all. But where it lives in the current state, it's like it's allowed, it's technically supported, and then that's kind of the end of the discussion. So
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right, we have a lot to talk about, including we left our fearless Adam at the end of episode 1105 talking about monitors, and there's a story there. So we're going to talk about that soon. The next thing that we're going to talk about is our sponsors, because you know I love simple tech that solves real problems. And this one in particular has had me hooked from the moment that I got home from MacStock. I know months ago, I've been waiting to tell you because I've been using OpenCase on my iPhone all summer. All my gigs, all my road trips, plane rides, you name it. It's amazing. OpenCase is a patented iPhone case with a literal open space in the back. That's why it's called Open Case. I don't know why no one else has ever done this, but it leaves a hole in the back of the case. So all your MagSafe stuff, easy for me to say, it's like on your phone. So not only is it getting right there, but it makes things a little bit thinner, right? All my MagSafe stuff stays in place. No more like shearing off because it's protected, right? It's thinner and lighter. It sits inside. And charging, of course, you're not dealing with any insulation of a case because it's right there. So, and it can be a stand if you want. It works with, they say, most third-party MagSafe gear. It's worked with every bit of MagSafe gear that I've tried with it. They have a bunch of accessories. I obviously have a zillion other MagSafe accessories. It works with everything I've tried. And yeah, I get to see the color of my iPhone. I know. It's amazing. Really, this is the case that I'm using. It'll be used on my next iPhone too. I love it. Don't get caught using anything else. Go to theopencase.com and use promo code MGG and you get 10% off. That's theopencase.com. Promo code MGG gets you 10% off. And our thanks to The Open Case for sponsoring this episode. And speaking of clever tech here, we love, especially when it's pocket-sized and packed with power, and that's exactly why I'm excited about the new Insta360 Go Ultra. It's about the size of an Oreo. It weighs just 53 grams and shoots buttery smooth 4K 60 frame per second video. Yeah, 4K 60 from something that literally clips to your shirt. It has a built-in magnetic mount system, so you can stick it to a hat, a street sign, your gym equipment, heck, probably your fridge, I don't know, and get killer POV or wide-angle shots hands-free. And the upgraded 1x1.28-inch sensor means that your footage looks fantastic, even in low light. Plus, it's waterproof, charges to 80% in 12 minutes. And yes, there's remote control via the Action Pod. So much tech. I haven't used one yet, but just reading the specs has me geeking out really hard. I know the creators in our audience here are going to love this. You're going to want to go to store.insta360.com and to bag a free sticky tabs that help you mount the camera everywhere from winter down jackets to outdoor jackets to backpacks with your Insta360 Go Ultra purchase. You're going to do that. Head to store.insta360.com and use our promo code MGG. This is available for the first 30 purchases only. So you got to go do this now. Store.insta360.com, code MGG to bag your free sticky tabs. And our thanks to Insta360 for sponsoring this episode. And you know that moment when your Mac is just slow enough to annoy you, but you can't quite figure out why? Don't get caught blaming the wrong thing. It might just be digital clutter. And that's where our sponsor, Clean My Mac, comes in. We've talked about Clean My Mac on the show. We all use it here because it helps us stay on top of the mess that just naturally builds up over time. All the caches, the duplicate files, the mystery downloads, system junk. But now, Clean My Mac has gotten even smarter. Their new cloud cleanup feature connects to iCloud, OneDrive, even Google Drive, and finds those forgotten, oversized files wasting space across your cloud and your device. And yes, it's all scanned locally on your Mac, so your data stays yours. And as we mentioned on the show, Space Lens is back. It maps out your drive visually. They've got anti-malware tools powered by Moonlock and the assistant that nudges you with battery, heat, and performance tips right from your menu bar. It's time, folks. Get tidy today. Try 7 days for free and then use our code MACGEEK for 20% off at cleanmy.com/MACGEEKGAB. It's actually clnmy.com/MACGEEKGAB. So make sure you go to clnmy.com/MACGEEKGAB or just click the link in the show notes. And our thanks to Clean My Mac for sponsoring this episode. All right.
Hey. Before we get to the monitor thing, real quick, I want to make a comment about OpenCase, and this is not part of the ad. This is just me having had one for a while now.
I didn't realize you had one too. Oh, okay. Yeah.
And so I learned two things. I think a lot of people who listen to the show already know that I don't use a case on my phone.
Right. This is surprising to me because you were naked and unafraid.
Well, I am still going to be naked and unafraid. So that's the point here. But the point is like, if I was going to use a case, like, this would be the case that I would want to use. Like, I've been so satisfied with this case, but I realize also that I'm just not a case person. So that's just me.
Right.
But because the only other case that I've ever, and the reason I stopped using a case was Apple discontinued their leather case, which is, I loved. I had that on every phone for years and years and years. When they discontinued it, that's when I stopped using a case. This case is so similar to me in size, because the one thing I loved about the Apple case, and you said it in the ad, this is thin. It's nice and thin.
Yeah.
It feels, that whatever material this is amazing. It feels amazing. I love being able to swap out the little accessories and stuff like that. It's just, it's honestly a really good case. I love it. I'm just not a case person.
Sure.
Yeah. But if I was going to use a case, I would definitely choose this one.
There you go.
For sure.
Go.
And I've used a lot of cases over the years, as you imagine, folks. Like, people send me cases. I've tried like every different style, design, material. Like, so that's saying something.
Yeah.
Something.
I agree. It's when I got this, I was like, all right, well, I guess I got to test it, you know, whatever. And I'll put it on for a couple of days and maybe I'll take it on this next trip with me, because I had a bunch of trips in July. And it's still on my phone.
There you go.
it's still on mine right now. I mean, I've been using it for, you know, however long, at least 4+ weeks. And it's, you know, it hasn't bothered me, but I do realize it's like, I'm not a case person.
Yeah, right.
Anymore.
That's okay.
I got so used to not having a case. It's just like, I want to go back to that.
But yeah, yeah, yeah. I'll share this
highly,
with them.
I highly yeah. recommend if you're looking for a case.
There you go. There you go. Yeah, this was not intended for the for the very much a surprise. That's I had no idea. Wow. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, let's go to your. I'm sure you'll hear more from us about the open case.
Yeah. So also a couple episodes back. Well, many episodes back, I was complaining about monitors and the fact that I have really old, just cheap HD monitor. I have an HP, you know, like HD monitor I bought. I don't know. Over a decade ago, it has to have been, you know, it's like not great. And I've wanted to get something better, a 4K or a 5K, but I always complain about pricing. And so we had, I'm going to blank on the listener's name now. Somebody write in and recommended the ultrafine ViewSonic monitors.
I think it was 4Ks. Jerry.
Jerry. Who,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we were kind of talking about that, and I was like, still, you know, I think they were just under $400, I think like $380 on Amazon or something okay. like that for the USB-C ones.
Sure.
And I was hemming and hawing, and I don't remember if this got in the show or not, but I was sitting there thinking about it, and I was like, oh, I have a business card where I get Amazon credit, and I'm like, wonder how many points I have. And I had enough points to basically almost cover the entire cost of the monitor. It's going to be like $150. So it's like I pulled the trigger right at the end of the show. I'm like, okay, I'm getting these. And I did order the USB-C ones, which I guess we got some follow-up from Jerry saying, yeah, don't get the non-USB-C ones. I guess the displays aren't quite the same, he says, because he got one for his wife, and it's not quite as sharp. So glad I got the right ones.
Yeah, but, no kidding.
So I order them at the end of the show, and I, you know, because I'm in South Dakota, you know, we don't have really fast Amazon, even with Prime. You know, it takes a few days. So it's like, oh, they're going to be here on Tuesday. And so I'm like, okay, great. Tuesday's the day, you know, right after Labor Day, I'll get my monitors, I'll set them up. It's going to be awesome. And so I'm watching the Amazon thing, and it gets to Minnesota. And then I log in the next day, and it's like, there's a problem. Like,
oh no.
Oh no. Yeah. It's like, oh, they're damaged. We're sending them back to the shipper. I'm like, no.
No, you're not.
And I'm like, and then I'm thinking, okay, well, it's going to go back to Amazon and they'll ship out new ones, right? Next day I log in. They're like, yeah, we're canceling your order. You should have your refund in a few days. It's like, what? It's like, no, I still want them.
Cancel? No.
Like you send them back. We're canceling.
So luckily I got on Amazon chat and got a nice guy, and he's like, yeah, we'll send you new ones. Okay. So now they're going to be here Saturday.
Oh, wow.
Which would have been last Saturday. But
yeah.
So hopefully everything will have gone smoothly. Just like, how is this the policy? I order something, and if it gets sent back, you just cancel it and refund me? Like, you assume I don't want the order anymore?
That's right. Yeah.
I kind of get that. That's easiest for them.
But it's the easiest thing, for sure.
Because they're going to pay shipping twice if you did send them back and didn't want them.
Right.
But, right.
You know, yeah. So,
but I mean, they know it came from the carrier. It was the carrier that rejected it back. Yeah. It wasn't me. So like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's automation. It's just, it's all automated. I know how it works. I work for an e-commerce company. I know how these things work, but it's like,
right.
Yes.
I will tell you if I don't want them.
Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah, exactly.
Anyway. Yeah. So hopefully they'll be here. I'm very, very excited to finally be in at least 4K world. So,
yeah. That I'm eager to hear how that works. Yep. All right. Where the heck are we now? We're going to cool stuff.
I think
stuff
we're
going to
do some stuff that's been found and is very cool.
Okay, then let's go to Bob here. I got all discombobulated here, but now we're going to be recombobulated with Bob's suggestion. Come on, that was pretty good.
That was good,
especially for a guy who's discombobulated. He says, my wife and I both like 10-foot iPhone charging cables, but I've found that on the iPhone, the two most common reasons for broken cables are, number one, the person holding the iPhone tends to bend the attached cable 90 degrees, and over time, this causes the outside of the cable to break And then, of course, the wires break next. And the second most common reason is tending to twist the cable in one direction until it starts to kink. This happens. This occurs over months of use. This is a little less of an issue if you know to untwist it on a regular basis. So for durability in both 90 degree bend and twisting, I get braided cables. Oh, yeah, that'll keep it from doing that. They tend to hold up better, and Anchor is generally my go-to cable vendor, but I've used others if I have a special need. For the 90-degree bend, I get spiral cable stress relief protectors. And on the iPhone, I put two of them together to give them a longer protected area. So these things are pieces of plastic that look like a coiled cable. They're not. They're just plastic that it is in a form, or maybe they're silicone. Okay. And he says he puts two of them kind of on the cable. He sort of twists one into the other to give it a longer, protective place, but it keeps the cable from bending because there's this protective sheath kind of around the top of it. And you can get 12 of these for less than $6 on Amazon. We'll put a link in the show notes, of course. You can get it. They come in different colors. If black and white are the colors that you want, you can get them for less than $6. If you want other colors, well, it depends on what other colors you want. You might be able to get them for less than $6, but still pretty inexpensive and a good way to protect your cables. The other way to do it is to buy right angle cables. That's what I finally did when my kids were like in high school and college, still living at home for the most part, and constantly plugging in when they sat down on the couch, and those cables would not last. You know, you might get a couple of months out of them because they would hold the phone in their hand with the cable bent to the side. And so I just bought right angle cables and just plug the right angle in, and then it kind of solves that problem. So that's another way to do it. I'll see if I can find the right angle cables that I bought or what I would buy today and put those in the show notes too.
I was going to try and find a cable. I love that tip because I've often thought the same sort of thing. I think I've heard people even using like little springs and wrapping those around the ends of their, you know, out of a pen or something like that. But any way to like reinforce where so it can't flex as much right at that joint.
Yeah.
But so another thing that I look for in different cables will have. When I'm buying a cable, will look at that connector end, and some versions will have more plastic in that area and longer or thicker plastic. So I tend to try to go towards that as well, where it's better reinforced. Apples are like usually really bad. They have hardly any support at that little joint right behind the connector.
Right, right.
Anchor has some ones that are really long and nice and thick, but they'll have short ones too. So I often, when I'm evaluating which cable I want, will even look at that. Just to gauge, you know, which is going to have a little more support so it doesn't flex right at the where you plug it in.
Right there, yeah. You know? I did find for $10 you can get two Anchor USB-C right angle cables at 6 foot length. I'm sure you can find longer lengths too, but there you go. So it's right angle at one end and straight at the other to plug into the charger. So, yep.
And no doubt 10-foot cables, I can tell you all from experience, it doesn't matter what brand, what 10-foot cable, 10-foot cables fail probably, in my experience, at twice the rate of shorter cables, at least in my family. And they all want 10-foot cables.
Right, right. Everybody, yes, of course. Yeah, 6 foot. Yep. All right. Well, good. All right. So we've got all kinds of cool stuff found there. What's the next thing on Cool Stuff Found, Pete?
Well, yeah. So we were talking airline travel and such a little bit ago, and I've got a long trip to Europe coming up this fall, and we did not spring for first class tickets. And I'm like, man, I hate the red eyes. I just do. Yeah. And so this is the brand name that's expensive is called Sleeper Hold, and it looks pretty good. The 4 and 5 star ratings on that on Amazon are 73%. I found one in the $20 range that has 81% and over 1800 ratings, 81% of which are 4 and 5 star. And it's a device that straps to the headrest and then gives you an eye mask, and the whole thing Velcros in and gives you a, keeps the head bob away. Cause you know, those stupid neck pillows don't keep the head bob away.
I turn my neck pillow around. so that
even then the pillows I still find front, it's better than not.
Yeah.
But yeah, it isn't good. Oh. And there's actually even a picture in one of the reviews here. I'm hoping this came from Britain because it appears to be he's using it in the driver's seat if he didn't.
Oh, but, no, not so good.
Which is not good. So it's usable in the car as well. But it's a way to hold the head still. Stop the head bob. The biggest complaint that I saw in the negative reviews were people that were too tall and had to scrunch down.
I can see that.
Get it, line their head up with the headrest. But some of those headrests will adjust up.
Yep.
So it depends to some degree on the airline.
Yeah,
I've put the order in for one of these so that when we travel across the pond, my head isn't playing bobblehead all the way across the Atlantic Ocean.
Yeah, for $20.
Right.
If you didn't want to spring for the extra whatever $1,000 or more to upgrade to first class per ticket, right? You know, you're flying your family, this starts to get expensive. $20 a piece. There you go.
Yeah. Even if you grab a 30-minute nap, you know, you're going to feel better than the head bobble the entire time. The last time I did a red eye across the Atlantic with my daughter, we got bumped into coach and it was painful.
Yeah. Oh, it
painful.
Sucks. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Huh. I like this. Yeah. All right.
The brand name, if you want to search for others, you know, the brand name, like I said, is Sleeper Hold. That's a $75 one.
Got it.
I'm not sure it's worth the extra $55.
Sure.
But, you know.
You choose. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
It's your money. Yeah. Yeah, for $20, I would try this the next time. Yeah, I'll find this. I'll put the sleeper hold one in. I mean, I see this looks a little bit, maybe a little more robust.
Yeah, I would say.
Yeah, it can go higher. It looks like it might because it's giving you a little more support. So yeah, take a look at both of them. Pick which one works for you.
And then go subscribe to Apple TV Plus for a year and the $56 extra
you've
just saved.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. Sleeper hold. Okay. Yeah. We'll put them both in the show notes and you can pick whichever one works for you. The last part that I have for this week in Cool Stuff Found is from our friends at Eero. It's not out yet, but it's called the Eero Signal, and it is built as it's a cellular backup for when you're presuming you're on a wired internet connection, which I know most, but certainly not all of us are. It is cellular backup for your wired internet connection, and it's coming out in early 2026. So there you go. They say it's starting at $99.99, and there's obviously, you know, some version of a subscription with it, but I think if you're an Eero Plus subscriber, yeah, there you go. You get 10 gigs of data per year with this. So that's, you know, that's going to be potentially enough to stem the tide when you have those outages. And then there's Eero Plus 100, which gets you 100 gigs of data per month if you wind up using this more and more often. So pretty interesting that, you know, and of course, it's just baked into the Eero ecosystem to make your life easier and all that good stuff. So, yeah, I'm curious to see where this goes.
Awesome.
Yeah, this isn't the only device to do it, but to have it baked into your Eero ecosystem, it's smart for them. I like it. Yep.
Cool.
Yep. Do either of you guys use a backup internet connection?
No. Backup internet connection, no.
No.
I'm holding one in my hand. Yeah. It's my iPhone.
That's true.
17? No, not yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
My iPhone 16 is my backup.
Yeah. 5G and, you know, hotspot. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but like not connected to your router. So your Apple TV, your IoT devices don't just automatically join this. I should have qualified the question. I like the idea of having a backup WAN connection. Yeah.
Where you're not going to even notice that you went out.
Well, you might notice, but at least you're back online. So, yeah.
But I will say we had a power outage recently.
Mm. And
I rolled out my my battery backup. You know, my now I'm going to blank
it's
on the
Jackery.
Band. Jackery.
Yeah.
Thing. And we plugged in a lamp and we plugged in the router and we were still online.
Amazing.
Could stream. And I didn't bother to go, you know, roll the TV or roll it over the TV or whatever I could have. But, you know,
sure.
But at least it was like, it made it much more pleasant. I was like, yes. Okay. This worked.
I hate to admit it, but I feel the same way. It just makes it more pleasant. And I'll put a link. I'm trying to think. You have the Jackery Solar Generator 2000 Plus kit.
Yeah. Something like that. Yep. Yeah.
And actually, my son just bought a Jackery thing, so maybe in last week's show I'll bring it up in Cool Stuff Found.
Oh, but, yeah, there you go.
It's a pretty cool little portable device, so I'll bring that to a Cool Stuff Found near you soon.
Okay, cool. Yeah,
it was my first time, because it's like, oh, we're down.
Uh-oh, did I lose you, Adam?
Or
you?
No.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I thought you were going on to something. I didn't want to cut you off.
No,
we were down. It was like, oh, we don't have to be down. And, you know,
right.
In the past, I would be like, oh, we don't have internet for 2.5-3 hours or whatever it took them to fix it.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. I know. It's pretty good. We had, we moved from our portable generators to a standby generator about 4 years ago. And I have enough UPSs or these kinds of things in line that nothing that matters goes off between when the power goes out and when the standby generator kicks in. And we were watching a movie this summer with our niece, and we're in the living room, the lights go off, the movie's still going, sound's still going, everything's still fine. We hear the generator kick on outside. Lights come back on, continuing to watch the movie. It's like,
that's awesome.
Yeah. It was like, gosh, I wish the sound of the generator were a little quieter. You know, like we were complaining about this.
Now that, my friend, is a first world problem.
Oh, yeah. We acknowledged that in the moment. I mean, we didn't, yeah. Like our butts did not move, right? You know, it's like, yeah.
Fantastic. So, you know, Steve Martin's definition of a first world problem.
What's that?
I think my masseuse is a little chatty.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yep. Yeah. All right. We haven't gotten to any questions. Let's do some reviews, and then we will get to your questions, because we have some good ones.
Yeah. So I'll kick us off. Tall Earthling has given us 5 stars. Thank you. And says, it's like hanging out with friends. This show is a great combo of tech and gab with 3 great guys who don't take themselves too seriously. And I love how they have a goal for every episode, of learning at least 5 new things. That's true. Hopefully we've all learned something. And thank you, Tall Earthling, for that great review.
Yeah. Yeah. MacGeekab.com/review is where you can go to leave your review. And I think we have one more, right, Pete?
We do, but I just learned something. Apparently there's 3 great guys on this show. I'm wondering where that other guy is. So I just, you know, asking for a friend.
Pete, I'm a good guy.
Yeah. What are you trying to say about
you
me,
two
Pete?
Are good guys. I'm looking for the third one. Huh? So... All right. Well, we get this one, which is, I continue to love listening to your show. As you mentioned at MacStock, most of our collective learning of 5 new things every time we get together is from listener-submitted content. I concur. Listening to Mac Geek Gab is one of my primary methods of professional development. In coaching Mac users, I've found the same truth by interacting with clients, exploring about their issues, questions, and curiosities, many of which I've never experienced before, and helping them move forward. Thanks for doing what you do, Earthsaver.
Thanks for that. Yeah. It is one of the things I enjoy most about the show is that you bring your stuff in, folks, and that allows us, all of us, but us too, like we learn 5 new things or more every episode as well. It's really like that's the point. It's, you know, we don't show up as the experts. Sure, we have expertise in some things, of course, but we're here to learn as much as anybody else is. Yeah, perhaps more.
Expert. X is a quantity unknown in algebraic terms, and spurt is a drip under pressure. Here we go.
There you go. That's what we do. All right, shall we go to... We got time for some questions here. Yeah.
Let's do it.
I think so. Let me kick things off with Will. Will has a question. He says, good afternoon, Dave, Adam, and Pilot Pete. I will be getting the new iPhone in the next few weeks. Well, maybe even now.
Maybe you already have it.
My question is around how to order. Up until now, I've always ordered from my carrier. This year, I would like to order from Apple directly. It will still be tied to my carrier, but paid for directly to Apple in one lump sum. Are there any caveats to this? Anything special I need to do or not do? What about turning in my old iPhone? I'm sure my carrier can explain that part. Do you have any recommendations or best practices? I want to make sure I don't get caught. Thank you, Will.
Well, I almost didn't get there in time because I forgot this was my question until you started reading it. And I went, oh,
yeah, you
I better
the
find that note because I was still on the last review. Thanks, Will. So here are a couple things I found useful in past iPhone purchases. And I will take the moment to recommend Mint Mobile because I literally pay half what I did with the big name carrier here in the Mint commercial. I bought my last several phones directly from Apple because I find it easier. And I'll remind people, if you are a veteran or active duty military or an educator, first responder, that sort of thing, go to the bottom of Apple's website and sign up to get that 10% discount. They're real good about extending that to a lot of folks. And when you're buying a new iPhone, that turns out to be real money. So going to Apple is great, but I would check with your current carrier because sometimes their deals, you know, they want to keep you, and sometimes they're going to offer some pretty hefty incentives to keep you. So, you know, I would recommend checking both places for sure. But to get rid of your current iPhone, you're going to back up to the iCloud or the computer. I prefer my computer because it's a faster restore via USB when we're done rather than over Wi-Fi. You also want to make sure you turn off Find My iPhone before handing it in, because if you turn in a locked iPhone, I don't know what they'll do, but it's virtually useless to them. I don't know if they'll just send it back to you and have you unlock it, or if they'll just lower what they pay you for it on your trade-in. So, and then wipe it clean, go to Settings, General, Transfer or Reset, and erase all content and settings. And that way you aren't giving your entire contact folder to somebody else. And then there's a couple other things I would think about. First of all, order as soon as the window opens. Launch weeks sometimes sell out pretty quickly, and you could find yourself waiting till November before you get your shiny new phone that came out last week. If you're turning in your old phone through your carrier, but buying from Apple, confirm with the carrier ahead of time how they're going to handle that trade-in. You know, you may get money back from them, or if you don't know anything on it, then obviously turning it into Apple would probably be the way to go. I should say your carrier may offer a higher value, but I don't know if they'll do that if you're not buying new from them. So, and then the last thing I would say is get as much storage as you possibly can, especially with the cameras as good as they are anymore. They are also become data hogs, especially if you're shooting, you know, 60 frames per second or 120 frames per second, slow-mo, 4K video. That tends to be data intensive. So if you can afford a half terabyte, or I don't know, do we have 1 terabyte iPhones yet?
Oh, yeah.
I think we do.
Yeah.
But get that terabyte, man. Use it. Use it or lose it, because obviously, like anything else in Apple these days, you can't upgrade your memory or your storage after the fact. So that's my bad advice, guys. You got any?
I mean, I've always bought directly from Apple, and the process is very straightforward. I don't think you're going to have any issues. The transfer now, too, is all kind of baked into the upgrade process. Yeah, and the only other thing, I think, Dave, you had it up on, I think, on the screen earlier. Apple has a great article that we'll link to in the show notes on exactly all the steps you should take before you sell, give away, or trade in your iPhone. So, you know, you do your transfer and then just go through that, like, reset process and make sure you follow all of those steps in order clearly. It will solve a lot of problems people run into where it's like, oh, I gave away my iPhone and now somebody else is on my iCloud, or like it's still on my Find My, or like, it'll save you a lot of headache in the future.
There are two things. I had it on the screen because you put it in the show notes, Adam, so you get full credit for this. There are two things in this list, though, that jumped out at me. One is the reminder that if you have stolen device protection enabled on your iPhone, know that that's going to cause some issues. And if, and this doesn't apply to this situation or most of us, but if you are switching to an Android phone from your iPhone, make sure to, and this is just a general quick tip, make sure to deregister iMessage before you do that, because otherwise there will be messages you don't get until Apple's systems realize, oh, this phone number is not affiliated with iMessage anymore. So there is a process of deregistering iMessage. And it's easier to do on your phone, but you can, if you don't have access to your phone, you can do it online. There's a link at selfsolve.apple.com for deregistering iMessage. But
So people actually go from iOS to Android phones?
Yes.
Sure.
Yeah, it happens all the time. Yeah.
Why? Why would you do such a thing?
I don't know.
So,
A lot of reasons.
Yeah, and I think if you tell them you're going to get a Verizon phone or an AT&T phone or something like that, it comes kind of pre-set up for that. But I think if you're buying directly from Apple, you aren't locked.
Well, if you pay all cash, you're not. But I mean, it varies from carrier to carrier. You got to check on all these things.
Yes.
You know, it's not always automatic.
Yeah. Usually the lock, though, in my understanding, is it comes if you're doing a 2-year contract with big name carrier. They're going to hold you to that by locking your phone to their system until such time as that contract's met.
If you're financing the phone, by any means, you might be locked. But it depends on with whom you are financing it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. It's also your upgrade cycle too.
Yep.
You know, I think there's situations where you're a year in, you're getting a new phone, even though you paid outright, you're still kind of under the old deal. So now you're still locked in for,
and I'm going to cut us off here because any of these things may have changed with the announcement of the iPhone 17. So sure. I just don't want to get too deep down into this whole. I didn't.
Good point.
If I had realized that this question was what to do before ordering, I would have put it in episode 1106 when we do our post keynote reactions. But I thought it was what do you do when you get your new phone? And it was both, right? And so there you go.
I'll just add. Pete replied to Will, folks, so he got an answer before.
Yes.
He got all this information before.
Absolutely.
So he's good. Yeah.
Key right.
Who knows? I'll make a prediction. The announcement's on the 9th. This comes out the following Monday. Pre-orders are usually a week and a half after, not the Friday after. Pre-orders of iPhones are usually a week and a half after, and then they ship a week later. So I think we're probably still in the window here. If history repeats itself. Shall we go to Jim?
Yep.
We shall do so at this time. Because Jim writes in, and he goes, we've been using a bunch of cheap Chinese Tenda mesh nodes for our church building that are no longer working well. Our building is 100 years old and made mostly of red brick and cinder block. The auditorium is upstairs with a balcony, lobby with office where AT&T's modem is, and on the main floor in a fellowship hall with classrooms in the basement. We're a small, low-budget group of 100 members. I'm looking for recommendations for a mesh network hardware to overcome the physical structure without breaking the bank. Thanks for your insight, Jim from Detroit.
Yeah, great question. And these are always difficult to answer because we don't know what we don't know, right? What mesh is going to work best in your environment? I mean, you've given us an explanation, and that's enough. Like that's unless there's more details, that's enough to place an order. And then when you get it, you're also going to find out, is it the right system, right? Because again, you don't know what you don't know. As a default, Eero is my first default. It's not inexpensive, so it's not what I'm going to recommend for you here, given that you're managing a budget. But Eero is worth every penny because it just works in most cases. Another default that I would offer is Netgear's Orbi. That's for people who need long-distance wireless backhaul. Or Orbi is the best at that. I think that's still what you're using there, oh, Adam,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean you've got a long haul to that you're on right now, right?
Yeah, completely.
Yeah. So you know, again, there's purpose-built things and they're all going to work in sort of generic scenarios, but you're not looking for that based on what you've described. When we're talking about feature-rich, reliable, budget-friendly mesh Wi-Fi, TP-Link's Deco is the way to go. And candidly, I always say it's like the number two, well, I guess the number three. You know, if we put Eero as like sort of the generic one and then Orbi up there as if you need your long-distance backhaul, TP-Link just sits right below them. And I don't know why. Like, there's a world where TP-Link could be at the top of this list. It's a close second or close third. It's like, for me, it's that there's this top three. And as someone long ago, I don't think he even works at Eero anymore, said to me, he's like, you know, we can't compete with TP-Link's prices. Their retail prices are less than our cost on our similar unit because they own the factories. Like, they don't have to contract with anyone. They're a huge company. They make a million different products, and they're able to operate at a scale that, you know, companies like Eero, I mean, I know Eero's like an Amazon company now, but they're still like, you know, kind of operating as this. So like looking at TP-Link and seeing the pricing compared to everything else, at times you can be like, whoa, what's the catch? That's the catch. Yeah. Right. There is no, like, that's the catch. So as far as which to buy, you know, I think the Wi-Fi 7 stuff is still pretty expensive. And so I would stay away from that if budget's a concern, solely for budget, take a look at it. But otherwise, you know, the Wi-Fi 6E stuff that they've got, that's what I would look at. And, you know, if I look at the XE75s, that's a three-pack of Wi-Fi 6E. Let's see what that comes in at. Yep. You guys want to take a guess? Wi-Fi 6E built to cover 7,200 square feet, three-pack mesh system. You want to guess as to what that...
$400.
Okay. Pete?
Yeah, I was going to say probably 350 for because they're really down there.
Yeah, 219 right now.
Whoa,
on Amazon.
Oh, God. Yeah,
right. Wow. So and you can add more, right? Right. Yeah. You know, and that's
buy two sets and you're still under budget.
Yeah, exactly. They say it's typically 249 right now. There's a deal for 219 or 220. So.
But that's last week.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it could have gone up or down since then. You don't know. Yeah. But that, you know, that's where that's what we're looking at for this stuff here. So yeah.
I just have two other quick bits of advice.
Yeah.
Just based on his description of the space and stuff like that, as much as possible, getting things line of sight from satellite to satellite, like, you know, kind of drawing out those lines is going to help you out if you can. Obviously, things can be challenging, like he's mentioning brick and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But we experienced this directly, right? You remember one day I was having trouble here, and it was because I had a satellite in my office that was pointed at line of sight to a window that was in my daughter's room where we had a satellite. That went away. And so now I didn't have that anymore, and I started having problems. And the solution was I just moved it to the other window, which was pointed at the line of sight to our living room unit. And boom, everything got better. So that can make it, placement can make a huge difference with your mesh, like where you're sticking those things. So if you have the ability to control that, definitely go that route. Yeah. What was the other one? The other one was something that I've
sounds never like heard he's about. Not in much of a Faraday cage, so that's helpful too.
Right. So, yeah, you know, for sure.
The houses in Florida with metal studs now are like, they make it worse.
Yeah. Right. Right.
So,
yeah.
So pay attention to that line of sight stuff, I guess.
Yep. Yep. I'm just looking. Yeah. The Wi-Fi 7 tri-band 3-pack from TP-Link is $940. So like it's a huge, huge tax that you're paying for Wi-Fi 7 right now. So bear that
I remember the other thing, because you bought up, you brought up the price thing. Think about, you know, it's like a lot of things. It's sometimes paying a little more avoids headaches in the future. So like if you're going cheap, but you're having to like manage it all the time and you're having to like deal with it all the time, and like time is money. And so sometimes it might be worth paying, if you can get it in your budget, a couple extra $100 to not be doing IT work for hours and hours and hours.
That's fair. Yep. Yep.
Dave, could you give a 3-sentence or so difference between Wi-Fi 6 and 7? Why someone would want 7?
A short
summary.
Yeah, Wi-Fi 7 is more robust and faster. It uses all the bands simultaneously. It's the first time that I've reliably seen gigabit plus speeds on like my iPhone, right? So, yeah.
Dang.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It's there, but like I have it. When do I need that? Like I have a lot of Ethernet in places that matter, but like if you don't and you're doing a lot of like moving data around, it's cheaper to buy Wi-Fi 7 than it is to put Ethernet in your walls. Yeah. And I think that's kind of the way you would have to look at it right now. But I mean,
and you don't have to repaint with Wi-Fi.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You don't get to repaint, Pete. See, you just got to change one word and it's an opportunity. That's right. Yeah. All right. Should we?
I'm going to take us, Terry.
Thanks.
We got 60 seconds before the air raid siren comes.
Go.
So, Dave, Pete, and Adam, my wife's 2020 M1 MacBook Pro Touch Bar has a problem. When she restarts her computer, old files that she deleted return to her desktop. She's a professor teaching physical therapy and is working on her second doctorate. Well, congratulations. She organizes her digital life in specific locations on her desktop. Every time she reboots to fix flakiness, old deleted files reappear and destroy her organized structure. The big question is why are these files are returning and cluttering her desktop. Biggest question is how to stop this. Regards, Terry.
All right.
And I'm going to mute now.
Yeah, you'll mute. I was going to actually ask you for your answer, but I will. I'll just wait until the siren's over. So obviously very strange that these files are returning. That shouldn't happen. My first thought, which might not be the best thought, but my first thought is file system corruption, right? Like everything's, and that may still be, I might change my mind. This might still be what it is. Because everything's fine until you restart. And so to me, what that says is there's some changes that the operating system is aware of in software that are trying to be written and can't be written. And so when it reads from the drive fresh, when it restarts, it inherits whatever was last written to the drive. And now these files come back. So that tells me file system corruption. There's for macOS today, there's only one thing that can fix file system corruption, and that is Disk Utility, or FSCK for macOS. And so I would boot into safe mode and run Disk Utility on that drive. And the hope would be that it finds some not too terrible corruption. If it finds nothing, well, then, you know, we're still back at square one. But hopefully it finds some corruption, but fixable corruption, because, of course, some corruption is not fixable. And then you have to wipe the drive after you back everything up and all that stuff. But hopefully it finds some corruption and fixes it. If it does, and this is generic advice for whenever you run Disk Utility and it finds corruption and fixes it, run it again. Because sometimes when you fix some corruption, it lets you see more of the file system. Well, lets Disk Utility see more of the file system and finds more. So this has been advice that I've given for, you know, three decades or maybe four. Keep running it until on first pass, it doesn't, it says everything's fine. That's the, then you know you're good. Then hopefully that solves it. But it might be iCloud desktop and documents syncing. If you're syncing that desktop to something else, it might be coming back. Or, like, I don't know. Is your air raid siren still cranking there, Adam? He says, one more minute. All right, so I will share. I know that the way syncing is hard. We say this all the time, and this week I was emailing back and forth with a listener here who something happened with syncing with iCloud documents, and the file names were there, and they were all 0K files, and that's actually what was stored in the cloud too. That you can visit the truth of the cloud by going to iCloud.com/drive, and you can see your files there, and they were all 0K there. So it's like syncing can get confused, and sometimes when it gets confused, the result of that confusion, even though incorrect, becomes inherited as the truth. And of course, that's what happened here. He had these 0K files, and then those wound up getting pushed up to the cloud, and that was the end of that, which sucks, which is why we also recommend backups. When iCloud Drive syncs, though, it stores, it has some temporary files locally, and then the files that you see. And it's possible that its cache, if you will, is also confused. And that's what's putting stuff back here. So in either case, turning off iCloud documents and desktop syncing would be another troubleshooting step to go through here. But the first one I try, just because it is simpler, is to just run Disk Utility. So what do you think, Adam? Okay, yeah, there it is.
That would have been my exact advice.
Okay.
Yeah, my first thought was something's going on with the iCloud, you know, syncing desktop documents. But yeah, definitely I would start with a local thing and then mess around with iCloud. I mean, it might even be as simple as just turning off documents and desktop and turning it back on again, right?
Yeah. If you do that, you might wind up with a... because what'll happen if you turn off documents and desktop syncing is it will move everything from your mobile documents folder, aka iCloud Drive, to your home desktop and home documents, right? And then if something's out of sync, what's likely to happen when you turn it back on? And I would turn it off, delete something, reboot, make sure it stays deleted, like make sure the problem is solved and that you didn't just move things around. But once you've confirmed that, and if you choose to turn it back on, you will see it will potentially take the contents of your desktop or your documents folder and put them into a folder on iCloud Drive. And that's just because, but it'll look like they just moved from being on your desktop to a folder on your desktop, because your desktop has moved from being local to being iCloud. And the same could happen with your documents folder. So it will just put it in a subfolder of that on iCloud Drive, so that you then get to pick what it's essentially saying. I'm not going to try and do any merging. You do the merging. Here's where one set of data is. Here's where the other set is. You decide what you want to keep and what you want to put where. Just know that that's what Apple's doing there. And it's normal. It's totally fine. Just move it around in whatever the place is. So if you're on your iCloud Drive, stay on your iCloud Drive and just, you know, move the things around. Get them set up the way you want. Let it sync, and you should be good to go. So that's all I got. And now we're at an hour and 18 minutes. So
perfect.
It's time to pull the ripcord, guys.
Are we sure? Have we got this time thing nailed down yet?
No, no. Linear time is linear time is for the birds, I think. Are birds real? I'm not sure. All these questions need to be answered. And so I think we have to do an episode next week. 11:08. We're going to tee it up. We're going to see what happens. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for hanging out. Thanks for sending in all your stuff. Make sure to check out the giveaway at MacGeekUp.com/giveaway for all that Unify routing gear. Which, you know, it is inexpensive, that Unify routing gear. It, probably not the right thing to recommend for that church, but it's less expensive than you would think. Huh. We'll have to think about that. I got to do some pricing and revisiting. But that's why we have to do 11:08. Thanks to Cashfly for providing all the bandwidth to get the show from us to you. Yeah, Pete, did you have a question?
I'm just wondering if we're going to do 11:06 too, you know.
We will have done 11:06 by this point, okay. Pete. Right.
We will have had.
Yes. Having yes. Had. That's right. Yes. Hopefully you will have already enjoyed it. If you need more of Pete, Linear Time or not, So There I Was is his other podcast. Adam's other podcast is the Debut Film Podcast, which is really fun. I do two others, Business Brain and Gig Gab. Some fun conversations, some long conversations on Gig Gab as of late. Not intentional. We're not going to keep it that way. It just kind of happens sometimes. You know how it goes. Here we are at 1 hour and 20 yep. minutes. Thanks for hanging out. Thanks for all your reviews, everything. Thanks to all of our premium listeners for doing what you do. You all rock. Thanks, everybody. You got anything to add now that the air raid siren is over, Adam?
I would say don't get caught, especially in a tornado.
Yeah, that's good advice.
Don't.
Made on.
Later.